Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 229 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 3 of A Feast for Crows. That's Cersei 1.
Cersei? I'm scared. I might need you to hold my hand through this.
Easy.
Well, as always, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you. And hopefully, we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes. They'll provide some additional information about the characters and other things of note in this chapter. How are you, McKelly?
I'm doing all right. Our show just looks a little bit cooler today.
It does. Yes, I'll say that. I have also turned a light on myself so you can actually see me during this.
You really have. Yeah, it's... very noticeable that all of a sudden I can see you very clearly.
But
that's not the cooler bit, although that is cooler too, but not the bit that I was specifically referring to. We bought these what are called dead cat pop filters for our mics, and they look a little bit like Albert Einstein's hair or what the English... kind of like what the English guards wear.
You can't be throwing these kind of questions at me live. I don't know what they're called.
Well, you know, the ones that the guard the palace and stuff.
I know the ones you mean.
Whatever that's called. They're just very fluffy and fuzzy. I get why they call it a dead cat. They do kind of look like a cat. The back of a cat's head, anyway. So, pretty cool. Hopefully it works. It's supposed to reduce our breathing. So if you hear less of our breathing, then it's doing its job.
Okay.
If you hear that, then that's a problem.
They are known as the King's Guards. How appropriate.
Oh, yes, the King's Guards. Okay.
And the idea of the hats was to make them seem taller and therefore more threatening.
More intimidating. Okay. Yeah. Well,
you live and
maybe Cersei will implement that now that, you know, she's in control. Maybe Cersei will have the Kingsguard running around with these big hats to make them look taller. I don't know.
Although, aren't the Kettle Blacks huge anyway?
They are pretty big. I think for the most part, most of them are pretty big guys. But, you know, if they were to have added the mountain, that would have really upped their height average to the Kingsguard.
That's true. I'm not sure he's Kingsguard material exactly.
No, maybe not.
Loyal to a fault, deranged.
Yes. Although Sandor, he didn't pull down the height average any.
Well, yeah, he was in some ways a good Kingsguard, but he did have a very noticeable Achilles heel, running away as soon as a fire started.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if your enemy knows that. Anyway.
So I have a little tale for you.
Okay, do tell.
So my brother Rob, who's been on the podcast and been mentioned on the podcast many times, has a son called Ben. And Ben is a sweet, sweet child, and we love him dearly. I think he's 12 years old. Don't quote me on that. Could be wrong by a couple of years. Don't see him that often. But he's very sweet. And he's the one who... He's French. He lives in France and has a French mother and French siblings. But he speaks perfect English. With a strangely neutral sort of mid-Atlantic accent. You can't tell where he's from at all. And in fact, his English is better than his French. He struggles at French in school. Yeah.
Even though he's born and raised in France.
Mm-hmm. He took a long time to learn French when he was little. He spoke English long before he spoke French. And was quite delayed on speaking generally, but I think because he was getting two languages thrown at him, so he's constantly confused.
Okay. But he's
smart kid, perfectly thriving now, but it's interesting that English is so strong in his mind. But he's
right.
He's taken to singing, and I imagine he's got a very sweet voice. I haven't actually heard it yet, but he was singing a song, and there was some kind of project whereby he had to sing a song at school. And he made my brother print out the piano score for it. And my brother was accommodating and printed out the piano score. And as it printed out ream after ream, my brother was like, how good is your teacher on the piano? Is she actually going to be able to sight read this? Because my brother can play the piano. And he was like, this is not easy. He was like, this is quite difficult. And Ben was like, I'll be quiet. Just give me the papers. You know, Ben's nicer than I am. He wouldn't have said, I'll be quiet. He was like, don't worry, Dad. She'll be fine, kind of thing. So it right. came to the day of it. And my brother, I think, took Ben to school and sort of met the teacher at the doorstep, kind of thing, and handed her the score. And she said, oh, thanks. She said, we don't have a piano.
Small detail. Can she hum it like a piano might?
Can you read that and hum along?
Oh, that's something. Oh, I was getting a kick out of that.
I did too. I my brother told it just in passing on the family call, and I was like, that's such a great story. It's like all this planning, all this. Oh, she'll be, believe me. Dad, I've seen this woman in action. She can sight read that and play it on the piano that doesn't exist.
She's the piano woman.
Apparently, the singing went great even without the piano. But,
okay, good, good, yeah. A cappella, you know, that's the really challenging way to do it anyway. So yeah.
Maybe you just had her sitting at the table just pretending, you know, air piano.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. That is a funny one. Well, that's, yeah, that is something.
Yeah. I thought you'd like that. I just had a feeling that that would tickle you.
Yeah, it certainly did. My eyes are watering. I'm laughing so hard at that. Well, I don't have anything quite that funny to tell. But I will say, so the Ray college tour bus rolls on, and this past weekend mm-hmm. we were touring a college here in our state, and Molly was accepted into the Honors College at this particular university. So, you know, she also received a big time scholarship that gives her free tuition. So, you know, we're my wallet is really pulling for this particular
one.
Yeah. And so, you know, we hadn't seen, she'd never seen the campus before. So we were up there, and we've done multiple. This is our fifth college that we've toured, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I had not seen this at any of the other universities we've been to. Now, our listeners might be like, yeah, this is on all college campuses. Don't be dumb. But it was certainly unique to me. We walk onto campus, and there are these, like, slightly smaller than R2-D2-sized robots roaming all around campus, taking food from the restaurants at the Student Union to the kids in their dorm rooms.
Get out.
Ordered food. I'll post a video of it on our social medias, but it was the weirdest and neatest thing I've seen in a long time. There's these little robots roaming all around. It was something.
Wow.
So, wow. Yeah.
I would have been like you. I would have been awestruck. I would have been the one filming it while all of those students looked at me like, oh.
He's old.
Yokels in town, I see.
You know, and it just made me think, like, you know, Stacy and I, we graduated from the same university at the same time quite a while ago. And I just said to her, I was like, you know, the idea of robots roaming around bringing food to kids at the time when we graduated college would have been in nothing short of science fiction works.
What the weird part about that is, I mean, if you think about it, if you when you graduated, if you've been asked to, I'm going to approximate here, predict what was going on in the world 25 years later, you might have said, oh, I bet there would be more robots doing things.
Right.
But what your imagination would never have got to was the bone idleness of students.
I know, right?
Just over there.
Can't be bothered to walk across the campus.
Billions of dollars of research so you don't have to walk 20 yards.
Yes, that thought did cross my mind as well, is, wow, these are some lazy kids. But in their defense, had that technology been available when I was in school, I'm sure I would have. Yes, exactly. So pretty neat. That's a first for me anyway.
All right, anyway, let's get down to business. How did we leave Cersei Lannister? Hard to imagine us thinking about this, but there we are. Last we saw of Cersei, she was jumping up and clicking her heels in glee when the Mountain, Gregor Clegane, killed Prince Oberyn Martell in the trial by combat to decide the fate of her younger brother Tyrion. Prior to that, she was mourning the loss of her son, King Joffrey, and busy stacking the deck of witnesses heavily against Tyrion for his trial. The relationship with her twin Jaime deteriorated quickly when he arrived in King's Landing, and last we saw was quite frosty. Since then, Tyrion has escaped from the dungeons of King's Landing with Jaime's help and has murdered their father on the way. McKelly, why don't we give a summary of this one?
All right. Well, Cersei dreams of sitting the Iron Throne. She loves the dream. The court pays her the homage she's owed. But Tyrion arrives and begins mocking her. The assembled courtiers snicker and, in classic dream trope, Cersei realizes she's naked. She tries to cover herself, but every rapid movement gets her poked by the Iron Throne. The more she squirms, the more the throne resists her. She's prodded and cut in multiple places.
Lucky for Cersei, it is time to wake up. Her maid, Sunel, is shaking her gently, but the room is full of armed men. They tell her that Tywin is dead, but that just seems to fit in with the dream, so she's having trouble believing it. She expects Tyrion to crawl laughing from beneath the bed, but no, he's in the Black Cell and will be executed later today. She denies that this could be true. Tywin is guarded, but Sir Osmond Kettleblack assures her it is true. A secret passage has been found into the Hand's suite, and the murderer presumably came that way.
Jaime's investigating the passage, and Loras Tyrell has been assigned to protect the king, which was Cersei's first concern. This makes her wonder if the Tyrells might have been involved. She commands Sir Boris Blunt to make sure Tyrion is in his cell, and Kettleblack to accompany her to Tywin's chambers. En route, she gets more details of the murder and begins to plan her response. Others will use this as a way to sideline her. She won't let it happen. She considers whether Stannis might be involved now.
When she arrives, it's a mob scene, and she throws out anyone who doesn't matter, annoyed that she wasn't the first to be informed. Her uncle Kevin is distraught, praying over his brother's body. She wants Pycelle to prepare the body, which still has the quarrel protruding from his guts. But he's been and gone. She's furious and demands any other maester to be brought. While Cersei frets about Jaime alone in the secret passages without a hand and a murderer on the loose, Qyburn is shown in.
Despite his lack of chain, he does what's needed and asks about the girl. Cersei hadn't noticed Shay. She won't accept the obvious explanation for her presence and quickly latches on to Qyburn's suggestion that Tywin may have been questioning her about Sansa Stark. Yeah, that's it. That's what was happening.
Yeah, that's
sure.
It. Yeah.
She has the Kettleblacks remove Shay and do whatever they want with the body. But nobody is to ever learn of her presence. Jaime returns. The passages are a maze, and there is no sign of the killer. Cersei asks him to be Hand of the King, but he laughs it off. A hand with no hand? No, he won't rule.
She's not asking him to rule. That's her job as Queen Regent. Jaime worries for Tommen and the realm, and gets slapped for his troubles. Kevin is furious with the twins for acting this way before their father is even cold. Cersei's tempted to abolish the role of Hand. Jon Arryn, Ned Stark, and Tyrion have been nothing but trouble for her. But she decides that Uncle Kevin is loyal, dependable, and unambitious. He's the right man for the job. The rest of the small council will need to be changed too. She suspects the Tyrells, but their position is so strong right now she has to tread carefully.
She wonders where Varys might be. As the Master of Whisperers, he ought to be on things, but there's no sign. She orders Sir Meryn Trant to bring Varys to her. Boris Blunt arrives, huffing and puffing, with the news she's feared. Tyrion has escaped. She recalls a prophecy that could be being fulfilled right this very moment. Just when she thought she was rid of him, she imagines Tyrion's hands closing around her throat.
Yes.
Okay. So Cersei.
So yeah, I feel like we didn't get too much of Cersei here because it's kind of like it's an all-action chapter. We don't have much time to think, you know, to sort of get in her head. But it's interesting that she was ambitious enough to dream of being on the Iron Throne.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes. Yes, yes, and you know that I think that has always been a dream of hers. So
yeah,
it's not like we said in the summary, it's not necessarily surprising that she dreamed of being sitting atop the throne there.
Yeah. So the chambermaid, Sanel, is the person who wakes her, but you noticed that there was another woman in the chambers as well, and that woman was called Jocelyn Swift. Why are you mentioning this to me, McKelly? Why is this in the notes?
Well, it's just because this is the first reference to her, and as she has two names, Jocelyn Swift, not just Sanel or
yes.
Jocelyn, right.
Right.
She clearly isn't a servant, but some sort of companion or
lady-in-waiting
for Cersei. Yes. Yeah, so I just thought I'd bring her up because she's mentioned a few times while Cersei's kind of coming out of her slumber, and it's when you first read it, you're like, wait, her maid has two names? What kind of maid has a surname?
Yeah. Cersei is wary of the Tyrells, which is a sort of an interesting backdrop to this. Her inner thoughts come to them twice, once on the way to the Tower of the Hand, and once after she's seen the body. Both times she thinks the Tyrells might be involved. One time she mentions that the Tyrells never had a path to the throne while Tywin lived, and so his removal. But they already did. I mean, they got Margaery betrothed to Tommen. I mean,
right.
Short of, I mean, how are you going to usurp the throne completely?
Yeah.
Getting married to the throne is as close as you can get, really, surely.
Right. And then the children, you know.
Yes,
but
the children
have
are Tyrells.
Last name Baratheon.
Yes, that's, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But, they, you know. Well,
their last name would be Baratheon, you say?
Theoretically.
That's
it's
surely
getting really complicated.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one thing that we know about Cersei is that she is she's willing to disparage pretty much anyone.
That's true.
But there is some supporting evidence for the claim of the Tyrell's ambition that she mentions. We've seen that Mace Tyrell is hell-bent on making Margaery queen. I mean, every possible king, even before she married Renly, there was talk of bumping Cersei out of the way and marrying Robert to Margaery. So
that's right, yeah.
It's been a long-running theme through this story is getting Margaery Tyrell to be the queen. And actually, back when Sansa was talking to Olenna and Margaery, Olenna thought that Mace, her son Mace, was stepping out too far with this alliance with the Lannisters, and that the thing about getting, you know, getting riding a lion is it's really hard to get off when you've gotten onto it. So,
but if you stick a quarrel through the guts of the lion, that might be allow you to get off more easily.
Yes, as well, there is that. Yes, yes. You know, one thing we do get from this POV is we do get a few useful confirmations and some revelations that I think are worth discussing. The first thing that I thought of is that her first thoughts are of her children. She's always spoken about her children like they're her top priority and acted as such. But now we get her thoughts backing things up. The very first thing she thought of when she heard about her father being murdered was the safety of Tommen. You know, and that's, you know, there's a lot of things you can disparage Cersei for, but she is a very attentive and caring mother. There is no doubt about that. So,
and in fact, although we skipped over it in the summary, she was kind of disturbed to hear that Loras Tyrell had been put in charge of looking after Tommen while the rest of the Kingsguard were... Weirdly, a lot of the Kingsguard was sent to wake her up. Like, that was the most dangerous thing, you know. It felt like there could have been better spread around. Like, two for the king and two for her, maybe, instead of the 3-1 split they came up with.
Yeah. Well, probably Jaime said, "Sir Boris, go wake up my sister." And he's like, "Can I take some backup? I might need some."
Yes, good point.
But another thing is, it's good that we were in her head in this chapter, that we're getting her POV, because we get to see, maybe this is not the completely accurate wording, but we get to see how unmoved she was by her father's death.
Yes.
It wasn't, you know, in her defense, everybody grieves in their own way, you know, and maybe she's in shock and it hasn't hit her yet, but even her words and actions fit what a, you know, what she should be doing, you know, her actions of trying to find who the person was that did it, that you know, the murderer, and getting people to come take care of her father. All those things are things that a grieving daughter might do. But as she's walking up to the Tower of the Hand, in her mind, she is comparing her father's death to a missing tooth. And she thinks there was no pain from the loss of the tooth, just a hole where the tooth once was. And now there's a hole in her life where her father once was. And, you know, it was her analogy, not mine. She's the one that thought of a painless hole in her life, you know. So I found that noteworthy, that her comparison wasn't like a painful loss, like when she lost her mother or something. It was, it didn't really hurt, but there was a hole that needed filled.
You raise a good point. I have to say, I didn't really think of it, but now you've brought it up, yeah, I can see this. There is a cold detachment to her. And like you say, it might hit her later, kind of thing. And as a noble woman, she would be expected to do certain things, you know, sort of act a certain way in public. And so that training would kick in a crisis situation to a certain extent. So some of it is that. But her inner thoughts are free to go where they want. And her inner thoughts... Right. Don't go to, oh, God, you know, they go to, yeah, you know, I remember that time I lost a tooth. It didn't hurt, but it was weird afterwards.
Kind of feels the same way.
Yeah.
Yes. And, and speaking of the lost tooth, the thing that was weird about the tooth was there was once a tooth there, and then there was an open hole where the tooth once was, and she felt that another tooth, something should be there. And I say that because even before seeing his body, she's already planning the next steps, because she knows there's going to be others trying to fill this power vacuum.
Yeah. And that was an interesting point as well, because there was a sort of sense, a sort of self-justification maybe, that she was being forced to think of these things because she knew that others would plot against her. But that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, you're sort of like,
right,
I'm going to plot against people because others will plot against me. Well, you know, maybe if you didn't, they wouldn't.
Right. Yeah, yeah. She recalls how quickly she had to move when Robert died. So she's, you know, she does have a little experience in moving quickly to make sure she's in the best position to fill a power vacuum. And she recalls that Ned and his meddling forced her to have to take action against Robert faster than she had planned. She tells us in this chapter through her thoughts that she had planned on removing Stannis and Renly first and then taking out Robert.
She did so, say that.
Yeah. That's a little bit of news we get there, you know?
Yeah.
And then she starts thinking about the upside of Tywin's death, and she thinks there'll be no more forced betrothal talk about her, and that with Jaime in the Kingsguard and Tyrion gone, she's the Lady of Casterly Rock. She's got a pretty solid case for being, you know, even after Tommen doesn't need her as Queen Regent anymore, she'll be the Lady of Casterly Rock. And I thought, might she be overlooking Uncle Kevin a little bit?
Yeah. I've got to say, I wonder if in the cold light of day she might reassess wanting Kevin to be the Hand of the King. Because in actual fact, for her strength, she might want him to go and be... I think I said this on a previous episode. Send him back to Casterly Rock. Have him be Lord Paramount of the West while she's Queen Regent, a much more important role. But the one thing about that is it leaves who does she have as Hand of the King, who she can be in charge of. That's the one thing that yes. she would lose there.
Yes. I guess if she executed that plan, she could make him Castellan of Casterly Rock so that it's not a permanent title that right. she can't fall back on
That's
when
true.
She needs
That's
to.
True. But he might not leave for that. He might leave for the lordship.
Right. Yes, yes. And he was Tywin's right-hand man. He's older than Cersei. And he knew Tywin's plans, and he is a man in Westeros, which means something. So she thinks she can rely on Kevin the same way that Tywin did, that he would be an obedient hand of the king and not question her. I think her thought was, the hand doesn't question the head. And I just wondered if she was correct there. I don't know. We don't get a lot of FaceTime with Kevin, and he always was subservient to his brother, but she is not his older brother.
Right. In this very chapter, Kevin berated the twins for fighting in front
yes.
of the dead body.
Yes. Tywin was Lord of Casterly Rock, and Kevin's older brother, who he admired greatly. Right. Cersei, on the other hand, is a petulant niece yeah. who he might not have the same level of respect for. So,
right.
yeah,
I mean,
get your point.
To a certain extent, you never do for the people you see grow up, because they're always a child in your eyes in many ways.
Right. Yes. Very true. Very true.
She does think to herself that she's Tywin's only true son, which is pretty disparaging about her brother. Well, it's certainly what she would think about Tyrion, but it's a bit disparaging about Jaime.
Yes.
Especially given how much she claims to love Jaime. And also slightly disparaging to sort of womankind generally, that in order to be the favored child, she would have to be a son. It's a bit, you know, she could think yeah. of it in different terms, I feel.
Yeah, it goes back to when she was talking to Sansa when they were hiding out during the Battle of the Blackwater. And she was wishing that she was a man and how unstoppable she'd be as a man, rather than, you know, a feminist thought wanting to lift all women up, where she was right. saying other women were weak and insipid. Only she was the lone woman capable of doing the things that she could do if she were a man.
Yeah. So they found the secret door. Now, you mentioned to me, just in passing, that Tyrion hunted high and low for that secret door in the chamber and never found it. My question here is, so you're questioning, is this pedantry, because how hard is it to find if they found it? But did Tyrion leave it open when he left?
Yes, that is. That was something I was thinking about. Because maybe he left in a hurry and he never closed it. That's one possibility. I mean, he's leaving anyway. What does it really matter to him
right.
whether that door is left open or not? But surely when they discover that he's missing, they're going to blame him, you know? But leaving that secret door open only shortens the time that it takes for them to realize that he's missing, which may be time he needs to escape. So you would think he would have shut the door properly. But it may required some sort of special way of shutting it that he wasn't aware of, that you have to move this latch or something.
I take the point you're making in terms of the time, because you're right. Given that door was open, you immediately know where the murderer went, and perhaps it shortens the timeline for him to be found. It does not shorten the time for Tyrion to be blamed, because the instant Tyrion is found not to be in the Black Cell, he is the prime and only suspect for this murder, regardless of the openness or closeness of that door. But you're right, it may have been left, I feel like it must have been left open for exactly the reason you're making the point, that it was very difficult to find from the inside. Otherwise, other people would know about it, and they don't. And Tyrion literally looked for it and couldn't find it.
Yes, he inspected. I mean, he knew there was a door in that room because Shay said, "I came through some door in this room," and he couldn't find it.
Yeah.
So, but he was one man, and you know, they may have had a team of people combing the room.
But the thing is, the thing about that, you wouldn't get to looking for secret doors straight away. You'd start by looking at the guards and saying, "How the heck did this happen?" You know, you'd look for, I don't know, a rope hanging out of the window or something. You know?
Right? Yes. A broken bar in a window or something.
Yeah. But if the fireplace has a strangely dark door at the back of it, like, what the heck is that? Then pretty quickly you're going to find that.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, Qyburn, who was a bit part character from previously, he came down to King's Landing with Jaime, having helped Jaime basically survive the fever that took him after the hand was cut off. He made himself very useful to Cersei, and she likes that. Cersei has a... We all like people who make themselves useful to us, but Cersei has a particular soft spot for it. And,
yes, she does.
Do we know how Qyburn lost his chain?
We don't yet. We don't yet know. But it couldn't be anything good, I'm guessing.
No! So... you healed the sick without taking payment.
Yes. So, you know, mixing him with Cersei could be as explosive as mixing Joff with wildfire. You know, this could be dangerous.
What's funny is he did two things for her in this chapter, basically. One was prepare the body for the Silent Sisters, which basically was just pulling the quarrel out of his guts, which wasn't very complicated. Probably she was grateful that he turned up and did it. But probably she was more grateful for the second thing, which is where the discussion about Shay's presence in the room. Because Qyburn actually says, "What do I do with her?" And that's when Cersei goes, "Good God, there's somebody else in here. I didn't even notice."
Right.
But everyone is like, "Well, I think we all know what she was doing in here."
Right.
But she's in, like, absolute denial. "No, it couldn't possibly be that. My father never slept with whores." And Qyburn says, Qyburn's the one who volunteers, "Probably she was being questioned by Lord Tywin, the former prostitute, in the middle of the night, naked." He didn't add those bits.
Right. But Tyrion did, in her mind. She
thought exactly.
Tyrion
she literally did, didn't he? Yeah. So, Qyburn ingratiates himself by figuring out what Cersei wants and providing it quickly and sharpishly.
Which is the opposite of what Grand Maester Pycelle did by showing up, not doing anything, leaving to go get the Silent Sisters. So, you know, possibly this could be not great for Grand Maester Pycelle. And she's the one who had Pycelle released from the Black Cells when Tyrion put him in there. So, you know, there's always been a bit of a... relationship between Cersei and Grand Maester Pycelle. Pycelle let Jon Arryn die thinking that it was Cersei who wanted him dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's always kind of been a "you look out for me, I'll look out for you" type situation, but maybe she's fed up with him and Qyburn might have been the Johnny on the spot there.
She gets fed up with people, that's for sure. So clearly Cersei had Tywin on an unimpeachable pedestal, but
but
it's weird because anyone could have disabused her of that notion, but of course, who's going to tell Cersei she's wrong? It's not that.
Yeah, it's an oddly childlike thought to have that her father has never been with another woman since her mother died, and that's been almost 30 years ago.
Yeah, he did have a thing about prostitutes, though. There's no question about it. There's something in him. Maybe it was because of the story we hear in this that his father, when his father died, he had a mistress who was a prostitute. And when he got back to Casterly Rock, because he was Hand of the King at the time.
Yes.
I think.
Yep, you're right.
She was wearing his mother's jewels and dresses. And he had her stripped naked and paraded through the streets of Castle Rock for 2 weeks, which is not very nice treatment of her. Tyrion's former wife, Tysha.
Yes.
Who turns out wasn't a prostitute, but Tywin probably thought was a prostitute.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes. That's possible. It is possible that he
treated her like one anyway. And Tywin's reaction to Shay originally was also very strangely prurient for a man who, you know, presumably slept with prostitutes on occasion.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I had similar thoughts when I was reading this chapter. And I was thinking that possibly his extreme dislike of Tyrion frequenting prostitutes stems from these complicated feelings toward them. And I think maybe it all goes back to his father Tytus's mistress. He's actually had two mistresses, as you'll find out in background. But maybe he is drawn to them despite his dislike and hatred. Like, he takes his weakness out on the object of his desire and torment. Yeah. Remember, some Hand of the King had a tunnel built from a stable to Aliaya's closet in Chitaya's brothel. Possibly it could have been Tywin to hide his shame, the fact that he so disliked the fact that he did frequent brothels, or at least women that he was not wed to, that he did that to hide his shame.
I'd forgotten the tunnel.
Yeah, maybe he's like, he's addicted to this idea, but at the same time, he's repulsed by his actions type thing.
But maybe it's not quite so psychological as that. Maybe he likes the perception of him as a noble man who doesn't succumb to the temptations of the flesh since his wife died. But in actual fact, he liked Chitaya quite a lot, and so he built a tunnel so he could go and pay her to sleep with him.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it could be as simple as that. But
it feels like there's a psychological element too.
It certainly explained why Shay was naked in his chamber when he went in there. And speaking of such things, Cersei has a thought when she sees Osni Kettleblack that he had scratches on his face from another of Tyrion's whores, as she thinks. And what she was referring to there is when Cersei had them take Aliaya captive, she clawed his face during the struggle.
I thought that must be what it was, but I didn't remember that incident happening. I thought that's what it must be referring to, but I couldn't.
It was indeed, yes.
Mm-hmm. We had wondered about the trial, if Shay had been persuaded to testify through threat or bribery. We learn now, because eventually Cersei recognizes her straight away once she sees her, once she notices Shay's presence, but she can't even come up with her name. She knows it's that prostitute who slept with Tyrion and now, you know.
Yeah, Shay, that's her name, yeah.
Finally comes up with the name. But she talked to her person to person because Shay had said, I'll do this testifying against Tyrion if you'll set me up with a man in King's Landing and a knight for a husband.
And let me keep my jewels and gowns and stuff that Tyrion gave me. Yeah.
And so Cersei presumably agreed to that because Shay then did what she had to do in the trial. But then after the trial, Cersei backtracked on the deal, of course.
Yes. And it adds a little bit of weight on the side of the scale that possibly Shay never loved Tyrion, was just doing her job that she was so easily persuaded into saying the terrible things that she said about him.
But we talked about this before. She was in a no-win situation, you know?
She was. That the bribery could have certainly turned to threats. And,
exactly. Yeah.
And worse had she not. So, yes, she was not in a good situation. Agreed.
Yeah.
But the irony of it all is that Tyrion had planned all these same things for her. You know, he gave her the jewels. He had her in a manse. He had planned to marry her to Sir Talad the Tall, you know.
Yeah.
But one thing I couldn't help but thinking, as the Kettle Blacks were disposing of Shay's body, they tried to go out the main door. And Cersei was like, no. Going through the yard with a dead woman's body. No, there's a shaft right through this little door.
It's not Friday. You can't do that.
And I thought, I know it's just her lifeless body, but you know they're just going to drop her down that shaft that is a fairly long way, and she's going to land with a thud, and
yeah.
It just made me sad.
They may have to clean up the mess if they do it that way, but...
That is true. Yes. Yes.
So one common theme running through this whole thing is how Cersei feels she compares to other people. Just a couple of examples of that. She asks herself if she should tear her face and rend her garments, like Catelyn Stark was supposed to have done when Robb Stark died. She thinks, how did Tywin react to Tytus's death? You know, she tries to sort of... She doesn't seem to have first-person reactions to things. She just tries to think, what should I do? What have others done? Should I mimic those?
Yes. Yes. That is really insightful observation right there. I like that.
I'm almost paraphrasing what you've already said, to be fair. I mean, it's...
But it's different. I think it's an important distinction. Is we, from the outside, she looks like she always has her stuff together. But on the inside, really, she's thinking, wait, what have others done? What should I be doing here? What did Catelyn Stark do? What would my father want me to do here?
But you see, some of that sounds like sort of autism. You know, it sounds like she's on the sort of autistic spectrum. But some of it is simply noble training. Noble training would be think what other people of your stature would do in this situation and then do that thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Well, I like it. I like the observation there.
Yeah. What I was also going to mention, the other facet of that is the removing... She wants Shay's body removed, and like you said, as quietly and as discreetly as possible. And she'll have the tongue of anyone who spreads the word that Shay was present in that room. So that definitely goes not so much to her lack of feeling, but much more her sense of controlling the situation and protecting the family name, you know, protecting Tywin's
very
legacy.
Tywin-like.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, yeah.
Yeah. But one thing I wondered throughout this chapter is whether Jaime is feeling guilt for freeing Tyrion. Because, you know, well, first of all, the first thing I thought of was the same thing that Cersei did. It was incredibly dangerous for Jaime to use that long ladder with one hand.
With one hand!
Yes.
I thought the same thing.
Incredibly dangerous.
Go protect Tommen! Send Tyrell down there!
Right.
The only thing I could think is that maybe he was going to go at one-handed pace down those ladders to make sure that Tyrion had time to get away.
So yeah, and that you saying that comes back to my original question. If that was his thought process, then he would not be necessarily thinking, I should never have freed Tyrion. He's killed my son. He's killed my father. He deserved his fate.
Yeah, but in for a penny, in for a pound. You know, you've released him. He's done something you did not intend. Recapturing him and having him beheaded is not going to... It's not going to bring Tywin back, is it?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely not. Right.
I'll mention this because I think this is a scene from the television show that I didn't mention in comparison with the TV show because it's a little bit further down the line in time, but it's relevant to what you're asking about here. Cersei makes him feel bad about his decision to release Tyrion later on. And actually, you can see the sort of cogs whirring in his head. And he's like, oh yeah, I really am pretty much to blame. And she actually says, you're to blame more than him. He wanted Tywin dead. You're just an idiot. I'm paraphrasing, that
sounded like a direct quote from Cersei's mouth. I could have seen that happening. Speaking of the twins, they don't seem to be in the best of places right now. They, you know, if you think back to A Clash of Kings and Storm of Swords, they so badly wanted nothing more in life than to be reunited. And they've been at odds almost from the moment that he walked back into the Red Keep.
Almost all the books could be named for their relationship, honestly.
I mean, for Jaime and Cersei's.
Yes, exactly. Even when they're not together, there's a Storm of Swords, you know. But
yeah, right.
The thing is, their relationship blows so hot and so cold so quickly that I'm not really worried about them. I think they'll be back on an even keel. Well, they'll never be back on an even keel, but they'll swing back to being hot and heavy again before you know it. That's my guess.
Possibly. And we didn't really get to know them all that well before Jaime left King's Landing after attacking Ned and his men. So this could be the normal behavior between the two of them, and we're just now seeing it because they're finally back together for an extended period of time. But yes, you're right.
They're
very mercutial.
Yeah. Of course, we did have Jaime's first-hand experience in the last one, but again, they weren't together very much in it. Maybe we'll see more of it now we've got Cersei as a...
There's one line where Cersei says, you see now, you need to be Hand of the King. And Jaime says, I'm not going to be a Hand of the King that doesn't have a hand. Don't ask me to rule. And my first thought was, it feels like a better fit than being Lord Commander of the Kingsguard without a hand.
Yes. Yes. You know? It's not the hands of the king, but it is Lord Commander of the Kingsguard who has to be able to fight.
But it also goes back to Oris Baratheon, who was Aegon the Conqueror's Hand of the King. And he also stepped down after losing his hand. And his line to Aegon was something like, the king's hand should have a hand. I won't have the men speaking of the king's stump.
Okay.
When he resigned from office. So maybe he knew his history and thought, well, if Oris Baratheon didn't feel comfortable ruling with or being hand with only one hand, neither do I.
Yeah. Cersei's quick to deduce that Varys might be involved. Was he? Well, I mean, we know he was to a certain extent. We know he helped Tyrion escape and showed him where the ladder was and where it went to. And
yep, that happened to light a brazier right there at the area where that ladder goes up to the chamber.
But I mean, her deduction makes sense because normally you'd expect Varys to be on top of this. Given how many people had been informed, it's astonishing that Varys wasn't one of them, really.
Right.
So,
yes.
His absence, I mean, he gets around. He could be over the other side of King's Landing up to something. But given that he knows what Tyrion went up that ladder to do, if he wanted to keep himself clean of that, if I were him, I'd be in that room first saying, oh my God, look, secret passage. I bet that was Tyrion, you know, something like that. Not skulking away somewhere.
Yes, very, very true. Very true. It definitely makes him look guilty, or at least something is up.
Yeah.
That he wasn't there.
If he arrives an hour late to this, it's going to look bad for him. So I wonder if he's not arriving back. I wonder if he's done a runner.
That is very possible, right? Yeah. It seems he's disappeared. And we know he was helping Tyrion get on a ship across the Narrow Sea. So possibly they're voyaging together on this ship.
Interesting.
But when Boris Blunt comes back and just, you know, announces that Tyrion was missing, he says two guards were sleeping and one of the guards, whose name was Rugen, was missing. And we know that Varys has dressed up as a guard to help free Tyrion. And we also know he was dressed up as a guard when he went to visit Ned, when Ned was in the Black Cells. Right. So it's very possible that this Rugen and Varys are the same person.
Well, there's Varys' alibi. Sorry, I have this character Rugen that I have to do. Like, I mean, there's a rota down there. I can't not turn up for work.
That could be the simple answer to the whole question.
So twice, Cersei mysteriously refers to Tyrion as Valonqar. It's the first time we've heard this term. Just keep it in the back of your mind. We'll get to the meaning of that term before long. Or, if you're one of our higher level sustainers, you'll hear it in a few minutes when we talk about spoilers.
Yeah, and I think we're ready.
Let's do it. All right, you got some background for me?
I do. So this chapter was a smorgasbord of background opportunities.
King's Landing. It's a hotbed.
Yeah. From a list of previous topics that have been covered. We get the Tyrells being upjumped stewards to Lord Paramounts of the Mandarin, Warden of the South by Aegon the Conqueror after the Field of Fire. We get Maegor's misunderstood decision to murder all those who built the Red Keep to keep the secret passages secret. Orys Baratheon, the one-handed, resigning from Hand of the King. But since this chapter focuses on Tywin's death, let's talk about his father Tytus, as I said I was going to do earlier, so I better follow through now. So Cersei wonders if Tywin wept for his father's death, as Tywin was in King's Landing as Aerys Hand of the King when Tytus died. And I think we just talked about a little bit ago, Tytus's last act in life was climbing the stairs to visit his mistress when his heart gave out and he died. Tywin comes home to Casterly Rock, discovers said mistress walking around in his mother's jewels and gown, strips her, parades her through the streets of Lannisport for 2 weeks, announcing that she was a thief and a harlot. Well, the woman in question was actually Tytus's second mistress. Shortly after Lady Jane Marbrand died from complications from giving birth to Tywin's younger brother Geryon in 255 AC, Lord Tytus began having an affair with the boy's wet nurse. It's said that Tytus preferred the comfort of her embrace over dealing with the stressors of ruling the Westerlands. By 267, she had been replaced by a new mistress. This woman Tytus brought out about town. She attended banquets with him, and he even asked her opinions on matters of state. When Tytus was out of Casterly Rock, this mistress hired and fired staff and behaved as the Lady of Casterly Rock. So when Tywin came home, he had had enough of this of these shenanigans and did what we know he did. And all, you know, after reading all that, Tytus hiding from ruling in the comfort of his mistresses and, you know, the trouble with the Rhaen Tarbeck revolution and all these things with his problems with his father's weak rule possibly is a further explanation as to why Tywin has distaste for women outside of marriage. And again, the distaste might have the side effect of unwanted desire. He has this kind of, he's fascinated by them, but he also doesn't like the fact that he is fascinated. Or simply, as you said, he has to be Tywin Lannister. He has to put on a certain air. Yeah. But he has, you know, he has the frailties of human desire.
Exactly.
Know?
Yeah. He is human, but he doesn't want to behave the way Tytus did. And he doesn't want to be seen to be behaving that way. Yeah.
And he doesn't want his children behaving that way, I guess.
Right, right. So comparison with the television show, all of this is skipped over. We move straight to Tywin's funeral. Jaime and Cersei have time alone with the body in Baelor's Sept, but manage to keep their clothes on. Jaime warns of the dangers to their power. Cersei reminds him that it's Tyrion's to blame. But as I said, she also blames Jaime too for freeing Tyrion. The remainder is part of the second Cersei chapter, so I'll hold off on that.
But that, all right.
Basically, that scene segues into what comes in the next Cersei chapter. Okay. Pedantry, I didn't really see anything here.
No, unless you count my, wow, they found that secret door really fast. But it could have been left open, and I thought of that.
That's what I'm sticking to.
Yeah.
News and notes.
Well, we don't really have much in the way of news and notes this week, but we do have a lovely review from Johannes C. from podchaser.com, and I'll read it for you. It goes like this. Absolutely fantastic. I started reading A Song of Ice and Fire a couple of years ago and got stuck after a while. It was just too much. I gave it a second attempt last year and was looking for a podcast to help me through it. What a find you guys were. I would say you improved my reading experience by several orders of magnitude. The world of A Song of Ice and Fire takes on completely new levels thanks to you guys, and the story unfolds in front of my eyes. In the meantime, I finished reading the books, but still listen to your new episodes every week. There are so many details that I missed, and I truly enjoy the many aha moments that you provide. Listening to your new episodes has become a ritual of after my Wednesday evening shifts in the restaurant that I work at. Now I even look forward to cleaning the kitchen there and listening to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Johannes. That's terrific. I love it. I love it.
Thank you so very much. And just a reminder, please keep, if you're using an iPhone and you have access to Apple Podcasts, just go open the app real quick. Give us 5 stars. Don't even have to leave a review if you don't want to. And be on your way, but it will mean a great deal to us.
Yeah, thank you. So let's conclude. Cersei's our new POV. We have much to look forward to. I don't feel we know her much better now than we previously did. But we'll keep listening for her inner voice. It'll take shape over the coming chapters, I feel sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think this is going to be a lively chapter series with Cersei. I will say it hasn't come up yet, but I would not want to be Tywin's guards right now. The two who were responsible for watching him. Just Cersei's a bit of a loose cannon, and like you said, she has a tendency to misplace her anger.
Yeah. I mean, it seems unfair because they were guarding the door successfully, but the door was not where the killer came from. But yes, they're definitely in danger. I would say equally, the two that were guarding Tyrion are hardly to blame. It's not like they fell asleep. They clearly have been drugged into falling asleep. That's not their fault, and they're going to get killed for their efforts.
That is true. Yes. Yes. But, you know, I say all the time that company culture starts at the top. And unfortunately, I'm afraid the monarchy isn't improving much from Joffrey's days if Cersei is going to take more of an active role here with Tywin gone now.
Yeah. I don't think she's quite as psychotic, but she's not nicer.
No, that's... Yes, possibly improving some, just not much from Joffrey's days.
She's very concerned with perception and reputation, but as I said, that could be innate, it could be a character flaw, it could simply be true of all nobles in the Seven Kingdoms, that they're expected to be those things, you know?
Yeah, that's true, but I really like the insight that you provided there, that I had not thought about the fact that she really was thinking, she was kind of mimicking, should I do this? Yeah. What did Catelyn Stark do? What should I do here? Yeah. But, you know, she seems to be thinking that Kevin is going to take this subservient role to her. I am not quite positive that she is as right about that. I just don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure she should make that assumption, I guess, is what I'm saying.
He was subservient to Tywin. Of this was clear. I mean, clearly he was trusted by Tywin and presumably offered him good advice when he could. But he did what Tywin said. He's not going to think of Cersei in those same terms.
No,
maybe it's become innate to him now and she'll get what she wants. But I think she's overestimating how subservient he's going to be to her.
Agreed. Could we see another power struggle similar to Cersei and Tyrion and Ned and Cersei before Tywin
came to town?
The one
thing I'll say, though, is that I don't think he's going to plot against her the way that Tyrion and Ned did. But he'll say no to her the way they did.
Yes, and if there is a power struggle, as you're saying here, I wouldn't bet against Cersei. So far, she has survived the other Game of Thrones players that have challenged her.
Yeah, true enough. And I think we can safely assume that Tyrion is going to live rent-free in Cersei's dreams for the rest of her life.
Yes. That does seem like very likely about to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And will someone step in and replace the missing Varys? Or is he about to step in and say, oh, sorry, I overslept? You know, let's say he's missing. Let's say he's fled. I mean, being master of whisperers is a harder than average spot to fill on the small council. You need a network of spies.
Right. And it's a very flat organization he runs, it seems. It's like him and a million spies, and they all report to him. So who's his replacement?
Right. And what happens to the little birds? Do they just fly away now?
It's... Yeah.
We'll have to find out, I guess.
So next up is, controversially, another first-time POV character, Brienne of Tarth. Exciting.
How exciting. I know, right?
You know what she's going to do? She's going to go find Arya and Sansa and bring them back to... Okay, maybe not.
No.
I don't know what she's going
to
do.
Well, she could bring him back to Lady Stoneheart.
I guess so.
And that would fulfill her promise.
In some ways.
Yeah.
All right, looking forward to that. There's four ways that you could help us. You could leave us a positive review like Johanna C. did. You could buy merchandise at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. You could buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostsharrenhal. Join us at any of the various sustainer levels. There's a tier to match your budget and interest. The higher tiers get you the spoiler talk. Make a donation directly to us at our website, ghostsofharrenhal.buzzsprout.com.
And if you're looking for more ways to interact with us, keeping up on the latest Ghost of Harrenhal news and developments, you want to see the little bot that runs around the college campus that I'm going to post on our social medias, well, you're going to want to check us out on our social media empire. You can follow us on Twitter at Ghost Harrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Discord, and YouTube.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.